believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to 2A Radio. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. I have a warning that has come to the United States from Pakistan. Early this morning, from a cave somewhere in Pakistan, Taliban Minister of Migration, Mohammed Omar, warned the United States that if military actions against Afghanistan continue, Taliban authorities intend to cut off America's supply of convenience store managers and possibly Motel 6 managers as well. And if this action does not yield sufficient results, cab drivers will be next, followed by Dell, Hewlett-Packard, Dish Network, and AOL customer service reps. It's going to get ugly. Moving on. I tried to make that transition without chuckling. All right, guys. I want to talk just a little bit about Judge Sotomayor that's going through confirmation hearings and really the spin of our regime president, Obama, when it comes to this. Once upon a time, Sotomayor came out and said something rather interesting about castrating white males back in 2004. President Obama said that comments made by Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor in a 2004 speech in which she called for the castration of all white males until they are no longer dominant have been taken out of context by right-wing ideologues. So we're going to actually read that context for you. I want to be perfectly clear about this next comment so that there's no mistaking my words to mean something other than what they plainly say. The time has come to end white male oppression by castrating every white male until they are no longer dominant in Western culture. That means forcible removal of their testicles. I realize the brutality of my comment, and I do not know how to say it more clearly. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs agreed with the president that the statement has been taken out of context and added that Sotomayor, quote, certainly did not mean that. So, she didn't mean that white males should be castrated, huh? Judge Sotomayor was simply saying that there should be room at the American table for diverse cultures, that's all. It is astounding that people are reading castration into it. Reading her own words. President Obama told MSNBC, look, when Judge Sotomayor appears before the Senate committee, all this nonsense being spewed out by ideologues will be revealed for what it is. Let me read her statement to you one more time, folks. I want to be perfectly clear about this next comment so there's no mistaking my words to mean something other than what they plainly say. The time has come to end white male oppression by castrating every white male until they are no longer dominant in Western culture. That means forcible removal of their testicles. I realize the brutality of my comment, and I do not know how to say it more clearly. This is someone who is in front of the U.S. Senate for this week, trying to become confirmed as a Supreme Court justice. What an unbelievable injustice to the citizens of the United States. And to have Obama and his press mouth henchmen up there trying to defend this or untwist it is reprehensible. More to come when we return. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
I have a real issue that I have taken with Department of Homeland Security. The reason being, the Department of Homeland Security was created after 9/11 under Bush and finally became a cabinet-level position. They get extra billions of dollars, and a number of different already existing federal agencies were encompassed under the new DHS banner. And Department of Homeland Security has failed to secure the homeland in several ways. If you want to sneak into the United States, overland seems to be the easiest way to do it. Overland from Mexico seems to be the number one easiest way to do it. Now, many of you are not familiar with this. Some of you very well may be. Department of Homeland Security puts out a bulletin every single day, every Monday through Friday. And those bulletins go out to different sectors within the U.S. government. And you have to have a certain level of security clearance to get the different DHS reports that come out. And I used to get those daily bulletins, daily news updates, things that are going on. And it's incredibly interesting, a lot of the stuff that happens. When they say, you know, we've stopped a lot of terrorist acts before they've happened, that's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. But the huge hole that I saw was something that should be of no surprise to anyone else. And that is insurgency into this country via the incredibly porous U.S.-Mexican border is unreal. And DHS has failed to stop that. Nearly anyone that wants to come into the U.S. can do so via Mexico. And how tough is it to get into Mexico? It ain't. That's like saying, how tough is it to walk across the street? Where there's a will, there's a way. Here's a little story for you. It's called Political Opinion is Not a Hate Crime. What's wrong with this picture? The federal government spends billions on Homeland Security, but apparently can't stop foreigners from illegally crossing the border or overstaying their visas. The Obama regime wants to bring violent terrorists captured overseas to the mainland and close the military detention center at Guantanamo Bay. Yet, in the latest bizarre twist, legislation quietly making its way through Congress would give the White House power to categorize political opponents as hate groups and even send Americans to detention centers on abandoned military bases. Representative Alcee Hastings. Now, where Alcee Hastings comes from, I really don't know. I don't know. She's an impeached Florida judge. That's right, isn't it? Isn't she an impeached Florida judge? Anyhow, she and Nancy Pelosi tried to install as chairman of the House Intelligence was... I'm sorry. Alcee Hastings, she is an impeached Florida judge. That's right, I just got this message sent over to me. Nancy Pelosi tried to install her as chairman of the House Intelligence Committee until her own party members rebelled. Introduced an amendment to the Defense Authorization Bill that gives Attorney General Eric Holder sole discretion to label groups that oppose government policy on guns, abortion, immigration, states' rights, or a host of other issues. In a June 25th speech on the House floor, Representative Trent Franks, a Republican from Arizona, blasted the idea with these comments. This sounds an alarm for many of us because of the recent, shocking, and offensive report released by the Department of Homeland Security, which labeled arguably a majority of Americans as extremists. Another Hastings bill, H.R. 645, authorizes $360 million in 2009 and 2010 to set up not fewer than 6 national emergency centers on military installations capable of housing a large number of individuals affected by an emergency or major disaster. But Section 2B says, Section 2B, paragraph 4, allows the Secretary of Homeland Security to use the camps, quote, to meet other appropriate needs, end quote, none of which are specified. This is the kind of blank check that Congress should never, ever sign. It's not paranoid to be extremely wary of legislation that would give two unelected government officials power to legally declare someone a domestic terrorist and send them to a government-run camp. After all, the federal government has done exactly this sort of thing before. During World War II, more than 120,000 law-abiding Japanese Americans were rounded up by the government and confined for 4 years in 10 internment camps surrounded by barbed wire and armed guards. Joy Kagawa chronicled her trauma her family experienced firsthand under FDR's executive orders. Families were made to move in 2 hours, abandon everything, leaving pets and possessions at gunpoint. It was wrong then. It would be doubly wrong now should members of Congress somehow fail to learn from past mistakes. Now, I've said several times on this show how America has become progressively more stupid over the years, and only people who really want to know what's going on ever really learn what's going on. And unfortunately, that stupidity is all over Capitol Hill, because I believe they're the ones who helped design the stupidity of the U.S. now. A little tidbit out of Arizona. A self-defense bill gets signed into law. Arizona, now keep in mind the Arizona legislature convened, I believe it was Friday before last, about 10 days ago, and they left some 80 bills on the governor's desk for her to act upon. Arizona Self-Defense Senate Bill 1449 directly impacts the case of a guy by the name of Harold Fish, who was convicted of second-degree murder in the 2004 shooting of a hiker near Payson, Arizona. Harold Fish claimed that the shooting was self-defense. During Fish's 2006 trial, the state changed its self-defense law to shift the burden of proof from the defendant, the person claiming to have fired in self-defense, to the prosecution. The new law that modified the self-defense law to be applied retroactively to Fish's case, as well as to any others filed after April 24, 2006, as long as the defendant did not plead guilty or no contest. All right. Harold Fish claims that the person that he shot showed up with dogs and was incredibly aggressive. The aggressive and violent nature of the person that he shot was not allowed to be brought up in court. They weren't able to prove that this person had a very violent past. He shot in self-defense. He was convicted of second-degree murder. He is now going to get himself a new trial and probably get himself released from prison where he didn't belong in the first place. And I am a big fan of that. For prosecutors to do their best to make their mark on people, whether they're guilty or not, really, to single someone out, especially someone that their guilt rests in the eyes of the beholder. It's not necessarily plain within the eyes of the law. Self-defense oftentimes is one of those matters. Now, this guy, Harold Fish, did not just go blazing up a trail. He had an excellent, excellent home life. He had a successful work history, successful family history, no run-ins with the law, and carried concealed, carried openly occasionally, and the guy was confronted by an aggressive trespasser that had dogs, that was threatening him with force and by letting his dogs loose on a guy. one thing led to another. There was no other anybody else around. He ended up shooting this guy. Well, the DA decided, well, you know what? We're going to leave this up to a jury to decide. You know, these gray areas are what's really, really making anybody involved in the government, anybody involved in a prosecutor's office, look really bad. So Harold Fish, thankfully, he's going to be able to probably get out of prison on appeal, which looks good. And I'm hoping that anybody else in Arizona that was really kind of pushed over on this deal do the same thing. And I like how this law said that now the burden goes to the prosecution. Well, as far as I can remember, innocent until proven guilty is what this country's always supposed to have been on about. It's always supposed to be on the side of the prosecution. You shouldn't have to go in and argue that you weren't speeding if you got a speeding ticket wrongfully. You should be able to sit there and have the officer prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you were speeding. You shouldn't have to sit there and argue your way out of, look, I wasn't speeding. This guy's radar caught some other car. It couldn't have been me. I had my cruise control set, whatever it may be. Well, justice is going to be served in Arizona. I'm glad to hear it. More to come after the break. Stay tuned with me. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
The main theme of this radio show is about your Second Amendment rights. We can learn a lot about our Second Amendment rights and what very well may happen to them by the gun grabbers of the U.S., be it in the government or be it through privately constructed organizations that have strong government ties. And we can learn what they may and will try to do, possibly successfully, by seeing what goes on around the world and historically how other nations have disarmed their citizens and turned them into subjects. I've got a story for you out of New Zealand. In New Zealand, the word reclassification in this case is another word for gun ban. We've recently seen, and gun owners need to be aware, of local and global threats. This includes being mindful of restrictions imposed by gun grabbers in other countries. Case in point is in New Zealand, where thousands of gun owners will be affected by a decision to reclassify many weapons as military-style semi-automatics. Here's a Cliff Note version. If you had a previously designated sporting configuration semi-auto rifle that had a pistol grip, it will now be reclassified as a military-style semi-automatic. Now, the previous A-class license that law-abiding New Zealanders could obtain in order to buy these guns will no longer be good enough. Those buying these guns now will need to have a much tougher E-class endorsement license to obtain a permit to be able to buy any of these guns and advise police of the make and model. Oh, and there's this. The change could cost some gun owners about $1,000 for upgrading their license and safety equipment required under New Zealand law. Not to mention this, a police superintendent by the name of Tony McLeod said the reclassification was not an attempt to create a firearms registration system by default, but better tracking of these types of weapons may be a result. All right, good one, Tony. So, New Zealand is setting a new standard for gun grabbers to look at. You can bet your bottom dollar that the Brady Campaign, Violence Policy Center, every other anti-gun group out there is looking at this, and their little minds are running quickly, like the gerbil in the cage running on his little Ferris wheel-looking thing, trying to figure how we could get that done here. Let's have a classification of guns, and let's pass a law on them. Well, I'm here to warn you, gun grabbers, that the Supreme Court has already done that. An attempt back in the 30s to make it to where guns had to be registered on a national level, on a federal level. The interpretation by the Supreme Court called that, under the National Firearms Act of 1935, I think it was, that only fully automatic guns and guns that had barrel lengths, rifles and shotguns that had barrel lengths shorter than 16 inches for rifles, shorter than 18 inches for shotguns, and guns with silencers attached, so sound suppressors, they're not actually a silencer, they're a suppressor, needed to be registered under the NFA Act. So, it's already been decided by the Supreme Court. So, thank you very much for your due diligence. I hope you scurry around like the little gun-munching rats that you are. I hope you chase your little rat tails and gnaw them off with your little rat buck teeth and try to come up with something that will go absolutely nowhere. You losers. You losers. You know, I can only imagine that if these people who spend their lives trying to get the rest of our guns couldn't own guns themselves, what they would go through. Sarah Brady actually did a straw purchase of a hunting rifle for her son. Did you know that? Well documented. Sarah Brady of the Brady Campaign, her husband Jim Brady, was the guy that got shot in the head on the assassination attempt in 1981 on President Reagan. They formed the Handgun Control Incorporated, later reformed not too long ago into the Brady Campaign to Stop Gun Violence. Sarah Brady straw purchased a hunting rifle for her son. How about that? So, what's good for us is, what's good for her is not good for us. She can do it, but we can't, right? No straw purchases. She goes and buys a rifle for her son. Good. We shouldn't have guns yet, but yet your son has a high-powered hunting rifle now. Nicely done. Hypocrites, buck-tooth, tail-chasing rats is all I have to say about them. More to come when we return. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
30 years ago, the Second Amendment was practically dead in the United States. Gun control was sweeping the nation. The courts accepted a vapid and fraudulent interpretation of an otherwise insignificant case as the primary legal precedent dealing with the Second Amendment. The rights of the law-abiding hit the ebb tide by the mid-70s. And then a grassroots movement germinated and took hold. The grassroots? Americans who've always regarded guns as tools rather than social statements. And they started fighting back. And starting in the early 1980s, they started turning the tide. One vote, one town, one legislature at a time. Shall issue concealed carry laws, which put the burden on the state to prove that the citizen should not have the ability to bear arms, were used throughout the country. In 1983, there were all of 8 states with these laws. But the movement, a force of a work-a-daddy, a hug-a-mommy citizens, who squeezed activism into their spare time between work and family, started organizing movements, city by city and state by state, to change the laws. And now, 26 years later, 39 states are either shall issue or have no restriction on the law-abiding whatsoever. Another 9 states have a may issue system, and only 2 states, in the name of Wisconsin and Illinois, which has had, they have been such peaceful places, still pay unthinking, just fiddly ideals that a disarmed and passive citizenry is the best. And this victory was won, one voter, one street, one bill at a time, from the grassroots, from the bottom up. There is a new bill by Representative Elmer, actually borrowed from similar bills that have become law in Montana, Tennessee, and South Carolina, and is part of a national grassroots effort to start that same dynamic for the second least appreciated amendment in the Constitution, and that is the 10th Amendment. The 10th Amendment has fallen on hard times since the 1930s. The Fed, operating under the cover of several key court cases, has been able to insulate federal power into a range of places and subjects that would have made the founding fathers vomit. For the benefit of the Obama supporters that might be listening, the 10th Amendment reads this: the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. Where the people mean exactly what Heller says it means, you and I. The overreaching of the Obama regime casts its effect into a stark reef. It underscores the urgency of the mission. The 10th Amendment is supposed to help protect the people from gross overreach by the federal government, which they've been doing more and more so since the 1930s. The implications of a weak 10th Amendment are obvious. The government can claim almost anything is interstate commerce as a pretext for regulation. The benefits of a strong 10th Amendment, the implications, everything. It's just everything, from taxation to Roe versus Wade. And I think the Firearms Freedom Act being introduced in other states, as Emmer's is being introduced in Minnesota, are a great way to marry the power, passion, and grassroots savvy of the most freedom-loving people in America with the need to push federal government back out of a huge swath of American life and do it to the Interstate Commerce Act, what the Right to Keep and Bear Arms movement has done to gun control. If you live in Minnesota or any of the other states where the Firearms Freedom Act is under consideration, get on your phone and call your legislator and let them know that the same groundswell of people that made gun control a third rail in American politics over the past several decades of trench fighting is still out there and looking for more notches on its belt. If you live elsewhere, your mission is clear. Let your legislators know that the 10th Amendment isn't chicken feed through overregulation and overtaxation. The federal government is unregulated in passing unconstitutional laws. Many of those laws are unconstitutional in the eyes of the 10th Amendment. Many states, once the Obama regime took control, sent letters invoking their 10th Amendment rights, pardon me, powers, against the over-oppression of federal laws. Idaho went so far as to send a letter to the Obama regime letting them know, as well as letting the everyone on Capitol Hill know, they will not tolerate any anti-gun legislation coming from the federal level that would otherwise adversely affect the residents of Idaho. Hear ye to the legislators of the state of Idaho. You're the type of folks that need to get elected to the national level and sit in Capitol Hill. You know, I was having lunch with Dave Champion of the Dave Champion Show here on RBN, again, 3 o'clock Central Time, Monday through Friday. We had lunch yesterday, and we talked about several things. And one of the things we were talking about is the statesmen that are left on Capitol Hill, either in the House or the Senate. And we came up with a couple of people in the House, notably Ron Paul. But it was difficult to try to find anyone who would be considered a true conservative statesman anywhere in the U.S. Senate. 60 Democrats, 40 Republicans. And I've got to ask, does anyone out there know of any true conservative statesman of those 40 in the U.S. Senate? Please call me or email me and let me know if you can come up with a 40 people out of some 300 million here in the U.S. are labeled as conservatives in the U.S. Senate, and I want to know if even a one of them could be considered a true conservative statesman. Somebody that's not on the take. Now, that pretty much eliminates just about everybody in Congress. But someone who's really principled. Because you know as well as I do, if you're going to spend time in politics, especially at the national level, you will become so compromised over time that you will lose your own self-identity. You won't even know what your own beliefs are anymore. That is an absolute abomination of our political system. It is simply whoring out from one elected official to the next, whoever his successor is, what their votes are going to be. Moving on. I want to read a little story to you called Fighting the Law Abiding Doesn't Fight Crime. You don't fight crime after the fact nearly as well as you fight crime during the fact. After the fact, when crime has come and gone, you have a score of crime. It's crime one and the victim zero. You certainly don't fight crime by fighting the electorate over more laws that criminals are going to ignore anyhow. And all gun control does is nothing but fight the electorate and ignore criminals. A perfect example of this would be California Assembly Bill 962. Fundamentally, this bill restricts a citizen's ammunition acquisition and transfer of ammunition to 50 rounds per month. A student goes through more than that in a two-hour class. Police officers go through more than that in qualifying when they need to qualify with their service weapons. My other observation is that most of our police are just as honest as our citizens, but the law will exempt them as it will exempt them from micro-stamping of ammunition soon. A lot of our laws restricting the sovereign exempt the servants of the sovereign, and it is this which does not fight crime, but fights the sovereign. You and I are the sovereign. The police and the government are the servants. But they pass laws exempting the servants? That's unreal to me. The entire legislature of California employs European thinking in an American public service of lawmaking. Actually, that's our job. They're hindered. I'm sorry, they're hired to carry out the wishes of the people, not their own. Americans cannot use European thinking. It freezes the citizens out of the process and never works. Their idea of lawmaking circumvents our due process by infringement, where the language of the Second Amendment states that it shall not be infringed. What of those words don't you understand? Shall not be infringed. To keep and bear arms is not just a gun. A gun is useless without ammunition. A car is useless without fuel. To have an oven doesn't make any difference in the world if you don't have food to put in there to cook. To allow people to keep food in a refrigerator but deny them the electricity to power it makes it useless. I would love, absolutely love, to see the Supreme Court of the United States make a decision that the restriction to keep of the attempted restriction of people of keeping and bearing arms will follow along the path of Heller, and ammunition is to be included in that. Because it's very easy to say, yeah, you can't restrict somebody's right to buy guns. Okay, fine. We're just going to restrict their right to buy ammunition. Or restrict the amount that they can have. It's ridiculous. It's draconian. It is horrendous, in fact. It's another example of those German philosophers who furnished blueprints of abuses of powers by continuing the crisis after crisis after crisis mantra of Joseph Goebbels. Often mentioned, gun control isn't supposed to work. Neither is ammunition control. The blueprints of governance from those German philosophers calls for the 1800 guidance, which has survived into the 21st century. And it says, never let a good crisis go to waste. It's the sum total of knowledge of all those philosophers is crisis. Make it sound like something is a real problem, but we've got the solution. Oh, there's gun crime out there. Let's restrict the ammunition. Guys, if they followed the laws, they wouldn't be criminals. All you're doing is punishing the people who already abide by the law. However you know that, that is no secret at all. You know that it's just another way to deny people their rights, to disarm the populace and turn them from citizens into subjects in one disarming act after another. What's the difference between American thinking and European thinking? I mean, we're both free, right? No, we're not both free. We in the U.S. have a constitution which was blueprinted on what we didn't want any more of. And Europe lives by the blueprint of German philosophers who handed them more of what they didn't want more of. You get it? You can see it in almost any library. See Hegel. There's nothing in the California legislature that can say which will make any sense of this law, of how AB 962 is actually going to fight crime, because it won't. You don't fight crime by criminalizing your citizens. For years now, gun control has succeeded in backdoor confiscation by restricting and punishing ammunition, the types of ammunition, types of weapons, where they can be carried, owned, or changed, then the regulation of ammo, then the amount you can buy and how you must qualify to buy it, and how much you're going to be able to possess. Nothing new, just more of the same. So why? Because it works in Europe. It's not supposed to work there either, but it depends on what you're trying to get done as to what works. Is it gun control or safety? Because you'll never have both. You can't have safety without guns. You cannot have a safe society without having an armed society. In America, you have to remember that millions of citizens who are now buying handguns are casting a vote of sorts, and it's a vote of non-confidence in our public servants, especially the socialists who have been taking control of this country. It may set up the Republicans to kick the Democrats out of office and out onto the curb, provided they get their collective fecal matter in an organized fashion, as all of this will be in recent memory come the elections if this attitude continues in government. If the Republicans are smart, and there's little available evidence that they are, they will make this a plank on their platform and even seriously consider the repeal of many gun laws which fail to fight crime but only hurt their constituents. This is the time for the Republican Party to take a gun owner to lunch and woo them back. You have to wonder why our public service want to disarm their servant or their sovereign superiors. When non-gun owners elect to buy guns, they have come to a decision and cast a vote of sorts. Will the government respect an election of people voting for gun rights and gun right representation? They won't have much of a choice. Those are my thoughts. More after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot me a little too well. Finger on the trigger loaded.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now, the last part of the First Amendment has been done. Yeah, they've passed laws. And they said they shall make no law doing those things. But they have passed laws. There are certain ways that you can redress the government of grievances. But to peaceably assemble and do it, you can't just do it. You've got to go through their form. Unconstitutional. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So over 20,000 gun laws on the books around the country. Has it been infringed? You bet your bottom dollar. There are more and more examples. These are just the first two amendments. There's 27 altogether. And I've got to tell you that the 10th Amendment is the one we really need to be worried about now. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Now, has the federal government really bothered to ever read that? I don't think so. 535 members of the House of Representatives and the United States Senate. 535 people to whom I am curious how many of them have actually read the entire Constitution and all 27 amendments at any time in their lives. How many have done that? You realize that all law is based on the Constitution, and hardly any law school anywhere in the country even, not requires, but even offers a constitutional law class anymore. That's like learning how to drive in a car that's already moving 60 miles an hour. They just throw somebody into the driver's seat. The people on Capitol Hill swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. Yet, I would go so far as to say, I doubt that half have ever even read the Constitution and its amendments. I wonder if Obama has ever read the entire Constitution with the amendments. I wonder. I forget which president was. I believe it may have been one of the Roosevelts. That every single night before laying his head to rest, he read the entire Constitution of the U.S. every single night. George Orwell once said, "People sleep peaceably in their beds at night only because rough men stand ready to do violence on their behalf." And I believe that would be the 3%, such as the 3% that fought in the War of Independence. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, and Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.